Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's BOLL&Branch.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast, a part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my co-host, Jack Smith. And we're here to bring you the latest on the USC Trojans baseball program, the greatest college baseball program in all the land, having won 12 national championships through the years. Jack, how are we doing today?
Doing well. We got a lot to cover, so I'll leave it at that.
How was your travel been? Your home game travel, if you will, as you had to go down to Irvine for USC's opening weekend after going to LMU, which is technically a away game, but will be the home field for the Trojans as well. What's the travel back and forth been like for you?
Well, I'll say I got to go down to Irvine. Didn't have to do it, got to do it. It was really fun. USC's got the place tricked out. You know, I had been to Great Park before and was curious to see what it would look like. They've got banners all over the place. They've built the batter's eye out in center field. They can put stuff on the video board. And my favorite part was there are 12 pillars around the concourse, and each one has a different banner for each of USC's 12 national championships. So thought that was a cool touch. Got to talk with Jacob Reams, the USC SID, and he said they didn't have a lot of time to throw it together, but I think they did a good job. Now the 250 or so miles that I had to travel over the weekend to get there and back, not ideal, but it was a really good opening weekend, and I was happy to be there.
Yeah, you are putting in the work going back and forth from Irvine while the team gets to stay down there going down Thursday nights.
I will say the team has to stay down there. I would not want to sacrifice my entire weekend. I got to sleep in my own bed. I got to do at least a little bit of something on Saturday morning. I don't want to have to stay down there. That would be a lot.
I would rather just be down there and not be traveling back and forth. But I also travel all over the place. I was in the Bay Area catching, I think I ended up at 7 or 8 games this weekend after 11 last weekend. And Arizona. So this weekend, I'm looking for a little bit calmer weekend. But yeah, that's right. For any newcomers to the podcast this baseball season, USC doesn't have access to their home field, Dado Field, this season because it's undergoing major reconstruction. This week was our first opportunity to see what things would look like with the Trojans on the road for their home games. Now, I definitely want to pick your brain about this a little bit more, Jack. But first, we are fortunate during a busy week where USC is going to play a future Big Ten rival and then two top 10 teams in Texas to be joined by USC head coach Andy Stankiewicz. After a rough start of the season, Andy and the Trojans were able to get off the schneid with back-to-back wins over a solid Portland team to take their first weekend series. Now they'll look to build on that this week against some stellar opponents. Andy, thanks as always for taking the time to join the Dado Download Podcast.
Shotgun, my pleasure, Jack. Good to see you guys.
Well, I'm curious. Shotgun, you go.
Well, let's just start with you start out 0-5, and a lot of people in my mentions are saying this season's already over, and I try to tell them, hey, it's not football. It's not, you know, it's 5 games of football. It's a portion of the season. But how did you go about, you know, when you have expectations coming into the season and you start off so slow, what was kind of the way you approached it with the team, trying to get them back on track and get going?
Well, it certainly was, you take the field with the goal to win. And when you don't in 5 straight, you know, efforts, you get a little frustrated I think my word is stay together, stay, you know, no, don't start what happens in baseball and happens in any team sports. Everyone starts kind of pointing fingers and, you know, we're not winning because of this. We're not winning, plain and simple. We're not winning because we're all, and that, when I say all, I mean me as well and our coaching staff. And so we're all in this together. And so we're just like, hey, we just stay together, stay in it, keep working. Keep staying positive. Don't let it snowball. And I think a lot of our guys, you know, from an offensive standpoint, you know, you get off a little bit of a slow start. You start putting a little pressure on yourself, and every at bat is a huge at bat. Every guy that's at second base and they're running a scoring position and you're hitting is a huge run because you want to be the guy. And it's just, I know this, baseball's difficult. And if you try to play it, you know, with putting pressure on yourself, you're really going to make it more difficult. And so I think that's part of it. You know, I just say, man, just stay the course. Don't, we got a long way to go. I said, hey, man, if there's a time to slow, be slow, it's now. And if we can just kind of learn from what we're going through now and make us a better team moving forward, I think it's all going to be a success. But if we're not learning anything in these tough moments, then we're going to continue to be frustrated. So just stay positive, you know, keep coming to the game with a great effort and great attitude. And so, we feel like we were going to get it moving in the right direction. We still got a long way to go, Shotgun. I mean, we've got 7 games in of 56, so we're a long ways away. So just keep showing up every day and keep working hard, and we'll be fine.
I know you mentioned the idea of pointing fingers, and not to point fingers, but the offense was kind of slow to start the season. I'm not going to make you dive in on what was going wrong, but after the shutout on Friday, you guys get the walk-off on Saturday and a real hit parade yesterday on Sunday. How do you feel like the walk-off win as well as the series win in total can energize this group going forward?
Well, I think it's always, you know, Jack, anytime you get a walk-off, you know, for your first win in home, it's going to be pretty exciting. And I think it was a little jolt, little jump start to kind of get us going yesterday relatively soon and get moving. Now, I'll tell you what, Portland's Friday night guy is real. The guy can pitch, man. He is a pitcher. And the Saturday guy that we beat, he was an Oregon State kickback. And it is as powerful a fastball and breaking ball as we'll see. I'm just telling you. I told the guys, you just beat a really, really, really good pitcher, a guy that's gonna have a lot of success in the game. Now he's not near the pitcher the Friday night guy was, but power, breaking ball, power, fastball. We're not gonna see too many like him. And so I said, hey man, you did a great job against a really big arm. And so that was big, man. And then to come back yesterday and kind of keep it moving, you know, winning is contagious, but losing it can be contagious too, right? It's two different forms of it, right? And so let's stay on the winning side of it, right, as we move forward. But it was a good 2 days, Jack. Thanks.
What do you feel like you figured out so far, and what are you still learning about this group?
Well, we're still trying to figure out. You know, when we came in, I thought our pitching staff was going to be very good or solid, and I still do. But Kaden Hoke's got to get better. And I'm people think, Coach, you're tough. You say things in public about your guys, but that's okay. They're tough young men. Kaden Hoke would say that I got to be better. Eric Hammond was not good yesterday. And he would tell you right in your face, Shotgun, and Jack, he'd tell you, I got to be better. And so those two got to be better on a weekend. And then our relievers have done okay. You know, we got to control a strike zone better out of the bullpen. We got some good arms down there, but we got a couple occasions where our bullpen's come in and walked a leadoff guy in leadoff inning, you know, and it's like we just scored a couple runs and you know, everybody talks about shutdown innings. When you score a couple runs and two or three or whatever, when you come back and play defense, man, you wanna do a shutdown and we were walking guys, you know, and so that's a little frustrating. So we got a ways to go there still, and so it's okay. It's the way it is, typically early in the year. Offensively, we gotta control our strike zone better from an offensive standpoint. Yesterday we had a good game, but I thought it was either 3-1 count or a 3-2 count where we swung a ball four. We put it in play and we made it, got out, and so that's not good hitting. Then we've got to know the strike zone and take ball four. I think it's part of our development. We talk about it a lot. But I'm not telling the guy to go up there with the I want to walk. But if you don't get a good pitch to swing it, don't hit. Don't swing the bat. And our guys, I don't think they're selfish. They just aren't controlling the strike zone better. And so, or they need to control it better. So there's certainly some things there. We got a young guy playing third base, called Rubius, who played the middle of the diamond. It's been a little bit of a college baseball. Third base is the toughest position in college baseball to play, in my opinion. You have to play in because a lot of teams bunt. You got predominantly right-handed hitters, big, thick right-handed hitters that are strong. They got aluminum bat in their hand. You got fastballs at 88 to 90. And so they're going to get a ton of action. And so it's a rude awakening for him. He's on natural grass and it's wet and the ball's jumping and he's trying to figure out, you know, what get a hop. And so it's been a little bit of a struggle for him, but maybe Cover Rubis is going to be a great baseball player in this program. There's no doubt in my mind. He's trying to learn a different position. And so it hasn't been easy for him. And so we got to find out can we keep him there? You know, should we keep him there because he's shown us something with the bat? For sure. He's competitive in the batter's box. I like his ABs. So I don't want to lose his bat, but I got to find a spot for him where he feels comfortable on the defensive side. So that's a big part of it. And so Jacob Galloway has been fantastic. But who's his backup? I can't catch him every single day. He's not a big guy. Just got to make sure I'm gonna make sure he's going to be healthy and strong for a long haul here. And so, you know, our outfield situation is – Overton's got to get better. I think you guys know that. Everybody's, you know, maybe criticizing me because I'm batting him eighth and ninth. Well, I don't really care what the he's a preseason All-American, preseason this or that. That doesn't mean nothing to me. Never has, never will. What means something to me is how are you producing on the baseball field? And if he's not producing, and he's fine. He gets it. He's not swinging the bat well. And so he goes to the bottom and try to get his swing right. Top of the lineup, I need to put people at the top of the lineup that I want to get more at-bats. And he's not somebody that I want to get more at-bats right now. It's not that complicated. It really isn't. And so, but I'm hoping that he will be. I'm hoping that he will get it moving. And so we do put him back to the top. And I think that's where we certainly would feel like we're the best, right, with him at the top of the lineup. But he's got to show us that he wants to use the middle of the diamond and he wants to hit the ball the other way on the ground and use his split speed. Ground balls to first base and ground balls to second base and fly balls to left field aren't going to work. And so it's up to him. At some point, he's got to want to make an adjustment. He's in the batter's box. I'm not. So we'll see.
Obviously, there's a lot of individual guys we can ask about, and we'll ask about a couple of them. But I'm curious about what the push and pull has been like for the offensive approach, because when you guys were in Arizona, a lot of balls hit to the track. Obviously, bigger stadiums didn't get out. But yesterday, 9 hits, and I think only one of them was an extra base hit, the home run from Kaikeia Harrison. Do you feel like that is a team that you guys are built more to be, a team that has a lot of singles, walks, moves guys over, as opposed to a team that's got to elevate the baseball and try and hit home runs to win?
Yeah, we don't. We're not. Nobody here is. I think is a big, we have some big, thick guys, but they haven't shown us contact wins. And we haven't made contact enough to say, okay, let's just go up there and keep swinging big and trying to hit home runs. They don't. It ain't gonna work. Now, maybe someday. I don't know. Maybe someday we'll get some a lineup with the bigger, burly, stronger guys that we want hit a lot of fly balls. But we were successful the last 2 days because we took our base up the middle. We took our backside ground ball, our line drive back up the middle. Right. Ethan Hedges, when he won the game for us off the bench, it was an off-speed pitch that hung, and he hit the ball where it should have been pitched. He pulled it in the left center field gap because it was an off-speed that hung. And that's what you should do, right? Kaikeia hit a home run yesterday on a ball down and in, right, and got inside of it nicely and hit it to the pole side. But that's where that ball should go. We talk about just hitting the ball where it's pitched, right? And so if there are fastballs, sliders away, off-speed pitches are away, then go ahead and take your offside base hit. Those I know this. You can't score a run until you get to first base. I know the big leaguers say hit doubles, and those are big, strong young adult men that have been swinging a bat for a long time. We're not there. We've got to take our bases up the middle.
Yeah, you've had some of those older guys, some of those thicker guys that started the season in the lineup, and you've replaced them with some freshmen just trying to get a jolt in there a little bit, it seems like. And some of those freshmen have shown out. What have you thought about those youngsters that you put in there when you do return such an experienced lineup and you've added a couple of older transfer pieces? So it seemed like the lineup would be difficult for freshmen to get in, but you've put some faith in some of those freshmen and they've rewarded you. What have you seen out of that group so far?
Well, like I said, Avery Covarrubias is disregard the defense because, and again, he's a much better defender, and he's gonna be really, really good. But his at bats have been competitive, and he lets the ball get deep. I don't see any fear in the batter's box. And he's Andrew Lamb. He's kind of come on the last 2 days where you're like, hey man, let's put Lamb out there, and he can hit, right? It's a position spot for him. He came in as a catcher. I don't know if that's something that he's ready to do yet. And so I know he put some outfield in high school. And so put him out in the outfield, and he was running him down fine and showing some arm strength and his throwing program. Like, hey, let's get him some at bats out there in the outfield. And he's come in and put some really nice at bats together for us. And he knows use the middle of the diamond. He's not trying to pull off the baseball and hit a bunch of home runs. He's just trying to get on base. Just that's it. Put a good at bat together, get a good pitch, put a good swing on it, and then we'll see where it goes. So I think he is a guy that's really, really shown the ability to handle the bat, right? And so, yeah, those are some guys that have just kind of had quality at bats for us. And I think that's what every coach would tell you. We're not. We just want good quality at bats, and he's been able to do it too. And those two guys have been very good. Kevin Takeuchi, he's going to be a big part of it, right? And so he's going to nice hitter. He's infielder, but he's athletic. He can play some outfield as well. So we just gotta, as we move forward in the season, we gotta find where can we put these guys at a position to where they're comfortable and we can get their bat in the lineup. And so he's a guy that's a swing guy that can play some second, can play some left, can play some right. I gave Deuce a shot out there in Robinson. He did fine. It's still a work in progress just because he hasn't played as much baseball. But every day he puts a bat in his hand and he goes in the batting cage and he takes swings, he gets better. He gets better. Now, is it going to be to the point where we think, hey, he needs to be an everyday right fielder or left fielder? I don't know. I don't know. Time will tell.
You mentioned that starting pitching something, especially Caden and Eric, have to get better as the season goes on. For those big three starting pitchers with Caden and Tyler and Eric, what's one thing maybe each that you want to see them improve on that can take their game to the next level?
Well, I think Aoki would tell you too. He's got to get his breaking ball in a better spot. He left some breaking balls up, and he's got hit a little bit. He's got good college hitters. If you miss, they take advantage of it, and that's what's happened to him, right? And Portland got some big, strong guys. He struck out a bunch of guys, but when they got him, they got him. They got him for they scored some. I think it was homer or double, and they kind of took advantage of some balls up in the zone. So I think he's just got to get down in the zone again, right? Get back down where he's can be more effective. And then Strasburg did a great job. You know, gave us six, kind of for whatever reason, kind of ran out of gas a little bit. We tried to run him back out there for the seventh. I don't know why, because his pitch count was still low, 73 or 74. So it wasn't like he was even close to 100. And so, but I think it, you know, anytime a starter can get you six or even seven, I mean, I think, as you guys know, that's a big deal. But he's been, you know, his first outing out in Arizona wasn't as good, but it was, the second one was solid. He was spinning his breaking ball, but running the fastballs in and out, and good changeup. So he did a nice job. But Hammond was just up on his own yesterday. He just couldn't get on top of his breaking ball, and everything was up, and looked like his fastball was flat. And that's not where he needs to be, man. We need that guy to get it moving. So we got to find out who's shoot. Nothing's guaranteed in life, right? And so if someone starts doing it well on a Tuesday or midweek out of the bullpen, or I don't know, competition brings out the best in all of us, right? If you know somebody's breathing over your shoulder, where you're like, ooh, I better keep it moving. And that goes for position players as well. So we need everybody needs to keep make sure they're moving the needle and getting better. And so I think those three know that, hey man, there's some young guys here that want the ball in their hand. So we need to get it moving.
There's so much we could kind of break down of individual players and, you know, trying to get guys on track and some other guys that have gotten off to good starts. But I got to ask you about playing away from home, your home away from home, playing at Irvine, playing at LMU this past week. What was the experience like your first week of being your road, you know, your home away from home, playing away from campus, but playing technically home games?
Well, it was a little different. You know, it was Thursday night. We went down. We have class. Usually on Thursday, we work out at, you know, 2 to 4 or 5. And then the visiting team comes in and works out from 6 to 8. And so you're off the field by 5, and you got some rest and you can go back to your dorm. Well, we Portland took the field first on Thursday. And so we came in later because our guys have class. We're taking afternoon classes. So we couldn't leave campus until, shoot, it was probably 5:30, almost 6. So by the time we got to Great Park to work out, it was 7:30. So you have your 2-hour workout and it's 9:30. And by the time you get back on the bus, it's like, you know, it's just late. It's later. So that's just different than what you're used to. And, but the Great Park has done a great job of fixing up the stadium. The university's done a really nice job of kind of branding it up as best we can. Our grounds crew spent some time over there, you know, last week fixing the mound and working with their grounds crew to help them kind of, you know, just teach them some nice tricks of the trade. And so, the field was in good shape. It was, it's what you couldn't really ask for more. I mean, we're in Irvine, we're in a nice place. University is, we don't have to go to Irvine every day and come back. We're staying at a hotel. We have accommodations there in Irvine. So we're close to the field. It's just nuances, right? The batting cages aren't connected to the field and you got to kind of walk up. And so there's little things there that are different than we're all used to, but you know, it's our home. And so I think the more we play there, the more we'll get accustomed, you know, in the rhythm of a game day, we'll start to become even better and guys will have their routines in place and understand, you know, what time they do what and how we're going to do it. And so I think that takes a moment in time and we try to go down there, right before opening weekend, we did. And we played a weekend series just to try to get a feel for the stadium and all that. And so that was helpful. But I think the more we play there, shotgun, I think the more we'll get accustomed and get more comfortable.
Got to get accustomed to two new fields this week. One last question for you. Real tough schedule as you guys play Michigan at LMU for your first home game there and then head out about as far as you will during the regular season to Texas to play two top 10 opponents. What are you thinking as you look ahead to these, you know, three teams that you're going to play in four games this week, considering, you know, you have the Big Ten preview for next year and then two really, really good teams out at Globe Life?
Well, I'm thinking about tomorrow, right? First and foremost, right? Again, I can't get too far ahead of ourselves. We've got Michigan tomorrow. We'll obviously try to get on some computer work here and try to get as much as information as we can from our scouting stuff and get a good feel for who we're facing tomorrow. I think TCU is undefeated and maybe even A&M. I don't know. I know they've all been playing very, very good on both of those squads. Well coached, right? Skilled athletes, all of it. And this is what we need to do. This is how we need to do it. We need to become one of the premier college baseball programs in the country. We have to play the TCUs and the A&Ms and the Michigans and all of them. We have to do this. This is important for our development as a program. And so certainly going to be a great challenge. First challenge is Michigan, and then we'll move on from there. But it's all a challenge. Man, you play great opponents, but at the same time, you got to play good baseball. If we play good baseball, we got a shot. Whether you're playing TCU or A&M or Michigan or Ohio State or Portland, if you don't play good baseball, it really doesn't matter. You're gonna get embarrassed and you're gonna be frustrated. And so, I think that's part of the. I think having guys understand that yes, we're gonna play these great opponents, but if we just play really, really solid fundamental baseball, we throw strikes down the zone, we play really good defense, right? We're competitive on a strike zone and at the plate. We run the bases really smart and aggressive. We got a shot. If we don't do those, it doesn't matter if we're playing TCU or we're playing Torrance High School JV team. It doesn't matter. You're going to be frustrated. So that's part of the growth of our program is wherever we go, we got to play good baseball. And if we do, we got a shot. If we don't, it's going to be frustrating.
I mean, I've heard those Torrance JV teams are pretty rough these days. They're just beating up on opponents and stuff. So
they very well, there's moments where they can beat up on just about anybody, probably.
Andy, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. I know you got a packed week this week. Be interesting tomorrow. You get to face off against Tracy Smith. You guys will next year be conference rivals after being basically city rivals at Grand Canyon and Arizona State. So little matchup there. They're just coming from Texas from playing in one of those tournaments. So maybe you can pick his brain a little bit about the Globe Life setting and whatnot. But we really appreciate you taking the time, as always, to join us on the Day No Download.
Jack, Shotgun, appreciate you guys. Thank you. All right, later.
With that, we'll take our break, and then Jack and I will return to further break down last week's action and then take a look forward at this week's difficult schedule for the Trojans.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Again, we really appreciate that. It helps grow the show. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you put Dado Download, the baseball pod, the one with Jack on it, whatever in the headline to make sure it gets directed to us. We actually have an email. We'll get to that in just a minute, Jack. You can also request someone for a future guest of the show. If there's someone special you think we need to get this person on, let us know. Just like we had Andy Stankiewicz on, just like we've had Travis Jewett, Seth Etherton earlier in our season previews. We're going to hope to get some players as well this season. But Jack, before I get to that email, give us a recap. What happened for the Trojans this week? You were there for all of it. The Trojans had a game rained out on Tuesday. They did not get to play their first quote-unquote home game at LMU. So then on Wednesday, they went to LMU as an away team. Walk us through what happened this week for the Trojans in their four games.
Yeah, 2-2 week. I actually didn't make it out to that game against LMU. I would have been there for UCSD, but that one did get rained out. So I was supposed to have five games. That day feels like a really long time ago, considering how the weekend went. Not a boring game, but a tough game for USC on Friday. Just not a lot of production from USC on either side, offense or defense. Shut out for the first time in the Andy Stankiewicz era, but I will give USC a lot of credit. They bounced back. They had a 5-0 lead on Saturday, blew the lead, and still were able to pick up the win. Ethan Hedges with a big walk-off. Good way to get your first win of the season at your home stadium for the second time of the year on a walk-off in the 9th inning with 2 outs. So that was a big win for USC, and they parlayed that into a series win on Sunday. Just a better group effort. 9 hits, only one of them was an extra base hit. And as you heard Andy Stankiewicz say, that's kind of the team that they're built to be. I thought that was a much cleaner baseball game, easily the best we've seen from USC all season. And they kind of ran away with it in the rubber match. So you think back to that LMU loss and then the loss on Friday for the 0-5 start. It feels like that's a little bit ago now because USC was able to right the ship and win the last two games of the weekend. So obviously not the start USC was looking for, but as they head into this week, I think you have a little bit of a different feeling than you definitely did coming off of Friday with the 0-5 start.
Yeah, definitely. They built a little bit of momentum and they feel like, okay, now we're going, because they could have easily been overpowered on Saturday too. Like Andy Stankiewicz talked about, Sam Stir, the starter for Portland, has some power stuff. I don't know what he was. I don't know if you have the velocities from that game, but he's been up to 95, 96, maybe 97 for Portland in their preseason stuff. Their coaching staff told me so. Power breaking ball as well. So he could easily have overpowered USC's batters, and instead they found a way to start getting some hits, and that was attack in the middle of the field, not trying to do too much, just like Andy Stankiewicz talked about. And they pick up 8 hits on him, chase him out of the game in the 5th inning, put up 5 runs. And then, they were able to let Portland come back. But then to get the big walk off and get that sigh of relief. Okay. And it actually started, I thought, the half inning before that. Portland has a runner on third base. And they get out of the jam, don't give up the lead, even though Portland's kind of built the momentum. After USC started out, up 5-0, them coming back in the 7th inning, eighth inning, they tie it up or the home run, and they get a runner on third in the ninth and not score, I think was big. And then I actually texted you and said, oh, here comes a walk-off. So, you know, I called that one. Just let you know out there.
At first I thought you jinxed it because Bryce Martin Redlonik started the inning with a hit. And I was like, okay, they bring in the closer. We'll see if what USC can do. Strikeout, strikeout. And I'm like, oh, we're going to the 10th, aren't we? And then there's two strikes. It's like, oh, one strike away from extra innings. Carson Wells picks up a base hit. Then you've got Ethan Hedges' first at bat of the day. And kind of just the way baseball works, like he ends up being the one to hit the walk-off. But I thought you jinxed us, and I was really hungry that day. So extra innings would have probably starved me. So I was glad that they were able to walk it off in the ninth.
I'm only trying to jinx you, if anybody, just to make sure can't go get food. So there's no us in this. But yeah, I just felt it, you know. Trust me, Jack. Trust me. I've seen a game or two. So USC now sits at 2-5 overall. Any key stats or any things that really stood out to you of where they're at right now?
I think the momentum thing is really big because it was rock bottom after Friday. They did not play very well, just never really got hits. Just could not touch Nick Brink, the starter, who was really, really good. He was as advertised as we talked about in the preview. And you look in and it's like rock bottom, and now you're facing Sam Sturr. He, from Oregon State, struck out 12 in his Portland debut. They didn't let the shutout on Friday get to them as much as I think the first four losses of the season did. And they were able to chase Sturr out of the game really early. Now, you mentioned they did blow the lead, but to be able to shake that off and pull themselves up by their bootstraps, get on their feet, deliver the knockout blow, and then immediately come back and do the same thing early on Sunday. They had a moment there with two outs in the second inning where if they had stranded more runners, who knows what the momentum, they could have gone all the way down the drain from the walk-off, but they got the hit that they really hadn't gotten in the first five games, and then they just continued to hit the ball the rest of the day. Got up by as many as, I think, seven runs, finished winning 10-3. So just a big game on Sunday to be able to carry over the performance. And now you just look for them to do the same against Michigan. And as we get into the later games this week against the TCUs and the Texas A&Ms that are really, really good teams, I think USC does have some good momentum. So while the record may be 2-5, I think the coaching staff and the players feel a lot more confident than that record would suggest, just based on the way that they've picked up those two wins since the 0-5 start.
Yeah, in that third inning, the big third inning, they score five runs on Sunday. It kind of opens it up and kind of feels like it gives a relief of, hey, you got a walk-off win, but look how hard you had to fight for it, to say, okay, we can take advantage of another team's mistakes, another team giving us opportunities. And that's what they did in that inning. They only had two hits in the inning, and they scored five runs. You know, it was walk. They had a single, hit by pitch. They had another hit by Carson Wells. So they got two runs off their two hits. The rest of the runs score without a hit. Now, that's partly because Portland had a big error that allowed a run to score. But walk on a full count. Walk, Austin O'Vern. You know, fielder's choice, run out at home. But then another run scores on a pass ball. So, you know, they were able to continue to pile on even without the big hit in that. And that's something they got to do, because when you play tough competition like they're going to do this week, you got to take advantage of any walks. You got to take advantage of any errors that the opposition gives you. You can't look that gift horse in the mouth and, you know, let those opportunities go by. You got to be able to take advantage. And that's something that they were able to do in that inning. And that's something they haven't necessarily done a ton of. Now, partly is because they haven't walked a ton to put themselves in those situations where now there's multiple runners on base and you're stressing the opposition, putting the pitcher in the stretch. But even when they had, what were the numbers last week? I mean, after, I think it was after the LMU loss, they were something like hitting like
two of 29
with runners in scoring position. Yeah. And then with runners on base, it was like 4 for 40-something or 49 or something. Like it's bad. It was under 70, not 700, not 300, not 170, under 70, 070 for both of those numbers after the LMU game. And against Portland, those numbers started turning around. So they started getting some big hits, some hits with people on base. And you know that's what you're going to need to put pressure on teams like Michigan, TCU, Texas. Now, Michigan's going to come into the game. Let's go ahead and look forward to what they're facing this week. Michigan comes in the game with a 2-5 record, just like USC. They played better competition than USC has, I think. Now, Western Michigan, they split a four-game set with them out in Arizona. I saw a little bit of that out there. I think Western Michigan is going to be a team that will They'll be in the top three probably in the MAC. So they're a solid team. They got some experience in the middle of their lineup. They have a kid, Kate Sullivan, who just broke the school record for home runs against Michigan down there. But Michigan in that series, they lost the opener 14-13. I think that was a walk-off, if I remember correctly, or a final inning or extra inning, something like that. They lost 11-9 the second game, so they're down 0-2, and they come back and win the last two games to even the series up. And then they go to Globe Life last week, and this weekend, and they get beat by Oklahoma State, Oregon State, and Arkansas, and there's no shame in that. Those are three really good teams. They didn't play great against Oklahoma State. Oregon State's Bazana just went off against them. And then Arkansas,
exercising some demons after a 17 strikeout performance by Arkansas starting pitcher on Friday.
And they were still in that game too. Oregon State's going to be really good this year. Bazana is a dude. I got a chance
to talk
to
him.
Saw
one of the home runs he hit, and it was just obliterated.
Yeah. I think that someone said that they started playing the natural music while the ball was still in the air.
Yep.
Like, that's how hard he hit the ball. And he's such a fun kid to talk to. He's a bona fide superstar. I got a chance to talk with him after he hit two home runs in Arizona in a game. So not bad for a leadoff hitter, just cranking out, multiple home run games like that. But then Michigan plays against Arkansas on Sunday. They rally late in that game, but Arkansas gets the final out. Michigan loses by one run. So Michigan is a team that's growing. They're taking, they're a team that didn't have a ton of guys returning. They're going to be solid contributors for them. Last season they came in late. The coaching staff did, and they were still trying to add depth, talented depth, similar to what USC was. So they were really relying on a core group of guys to kind of, get them, especially on the mound. Their Friday guy, I remember I was at Rutgers, and their Friday guy was struggling the first couple innings, and they just yanked him immediately. I was like, that seems strange. You guys don't have a ton of arms. He's like, exactly. We don't have a ton of arms, so we're going to try to bring him back later in the weekend on Sunday, and say, we'll treat this as a relief appearance, and then he'll come in on Sunday, and hopefully we can get multiple innings out of him then, because we just don't have enough guys to let someone just sit out there and not be at their best. So that's how thin they were last year. They've added some pieces this year, but there's some young pieces. Tracy Smith will eventually get that program. It will be a very good, challenging program in the future for USC in the Big Ten, but not necessarily there yet. And I'm curious to see, this will be their first midweek game, so I'm curious to see what do they have in the midweek arms, because they were so thin last year. Now, the guy I saw them pitch against Western Michigan was really good, but that was a weekend starter. I didn't get to see a whole game, so I didn't get to see their relievers and stuff. So that's something I'm going to be curious about. And their team has been on the road. They played in Arizona the first weekend. They played in Texas this past weekend. Now they're coming to L.A. to play, this entire week. I'm guessing this is their spring break trip, because they're playing at USC on Tuesday, at LMU on Wednesday, and then at UCLA on Friday, at Irvine on Saturday, finish up in Dodger Stadium on Sunday, before they finally get to go back home next week and play their first game. So it's going to be 3 weeks into the season before they play their first home game. So the exact opposite of a team like Arkansas, who they just played, because Arkansas does not play a non-conference road game this season at all. They played three neutral site games last weekend at Globe Life, and that's it. Everything else comes through Fayetteville, baby. But that's Michigan. I don't know if anything stands out to you from looking at their stat sheet or anything. If you got a chance to check out any of their games, I don't know if any of them, if you saw any of the Globe Life games or whatnot. I know you saw some of those highlights, but they're a team that will be in the middle of the pack in the Big Ten probably. So this is a game USC needs to take care of business at home, I think.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting. You've got 2-5 teams with different levels of momentum, I think, and Michigan has lost its last three games, but you're coming off of a competitive performance against Arkansas, which, could have an argument to be the best team in the country. So we'll see if they can shake that one off, or maybe even get momentum from a game that is a loss, but that they played really well against a good team. And then you've got USC, who's also 2-5, but coming off of its two wins. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how the momentum pushes back and forth between those two teams. But then shotgun USC heads out to Texas for the weekend. And the first team that they play is a really, really good team. It's TCU, right now ranked fifth in the country, but they're the highest ranked undefeated team. And we could look up, and if they roll through this upcoming week, could have an argument to say they're the best team in the country. 7-0 coming off of a sweep of UCLA. tight games in the first two, a 4-3 win and then a 6-3 win, but then just run ruled UCLA in the Sunday game, 13-3. Team is loaded with talent. It's got a lot of young talent, and they supplemented it with some big transfer portal pieces, a really good freshman class, a lot of names to watch out for that one. I've gotten to really dive into the roster. Peyton Tolley is a dog, a finalist for the John Olerud two-way player of the year. He's their Friday starter and their cleanup hitter, and every other position they've got one or two guys at that they're willing to give shots to. Anthony Silva could go in the first round of the draft. Just up and down the lineup, they have hit the ball all year. They had a lot of close games, including that opening series against Florida Gulf Coast with some huge comebacks. They really haven't, outside of the UCLA game, won too convincingly in any matchup, including like a 6-5 win over Texas State. So you look at the 7-0 record, it could be worse. But as of right now, they're the highest ranked undefeated team, and USC's got to play them twice over the weekend.
Yeah, this is a team that is building off of a trip to Omaha last year, a team that I saw in the middle of season last year at West Virginia, and I was like, this team's not going to make the NCAA tournament. And they just completely turned it around. And part of that is they basically said, we're going to run with our freshmen. We're going to throw them out there, and we're going to roll with these guys. You know, we're not going to trust the veteran guys that aren't getting done. We're going to go with the youth, and that has paid off dividends for them. Guys like Benebelt, the lefty reliever, just comes around the corner, is a nightmare on any left-handed hitter. So that'll be an interesting matchup with someone like Austin O'Vern, JT Walden, if he's in the lineup, those type of guys. He'll come out of the pen. He can go multiple innings for them. USC will most likely see Tolley. Is it Tolley? Is it Peyton Toll or Peyton Tolley?
So his Twitter handle is Rolly Tolley. So I'm gonna just assume it's pronounced like Rolly.
Okay, so Peyton Tolley is a Wichita State transfer, and you see there's Wichita State transfers all over the place this year because their coaching staff left, and they're actually playing pretty well. Wichita State is with Brian Green, who came from Washington State, but. Just imagine if they kept all their talent. It'd be interesting. That was a big-time pickup for TCU. That was the biggest of the pickup. Like you said, Friday starter, middle of the lineup bat. Doesn't get much better than that. He hasn't been outstanding so far. He hasn't been bad. He's got big strikeout numbers, 16 strikeouts in 8 innings, but he's given up 6 runs in those 8 innings, given up 10 hits, and he's walked 7. And the question has always been the walks with him. You know, he'll strike out guys, but he'll also run his pitch count way up. And that's why he's only thrown 8 innings in 2 starts. Now, he's been on a pitch count, so, you know, maybe he's at probably 10 innings if it's middle of the season. But still, if your Friday starter's only giving you 5 innings, you want a little bit more out of it. You want that 6, you want 7 to get you into your bullpen and set you up better. But Abelt's the big guy out of the bullpen. He's already got 3 saves for them. Like you mentioned, they play close games. So USC will play them on Friday. And then they'll play them again on Sunday. So they'll more than likely face Zach Morris on Sunday there as well. Cole Klecker's their Saturday starter. He's pretty good. He was a freshman last year and got thrown in the mix and, you know, was a guy that really carried them at times last year as well.
Yeah, the pitching hasn't really shown up for TCU yet. You know, you've got a team 5.4 ERA. They've walked 31 so far. But as a team, Shunkin, do you know what TCU's team OPS is?
I'm going to say it's good.
It's 1.021. They are one dotting as a team. They've got, I believe it is 4 or 5 players above a 1 dot themselves. So they are killing the baseball. And, you know, we think UCLA is going to have a bounce back year, and they swept them out in Fort Worth, including run ruling them on Sunday, which I don't think USC had one of those last year. And I'm not sure I knew you could run rule in college baseball.
Yes, you can run rule if it's established beforehand. Now, some conferences have run rules set up. The WAC is one of them where, you know, if it's 10 runs after 7 innings, and part of that is if you're in a smaller conference, you usually don't have the depth on the mound. So it's just kind of saving arms so you don't get some ridiculous scores, because New Mexico State would be playing some teams when Brian Green was there in particular, and it'd be 32-5 or something like that. And like, let's just end this 2 innings early. And the coaches can agree on it. Like, I was at Stanford and Penn State this weekend, and the first game, they did not have an established run rule. And the game, I can't remember what the score ended up being. It was, you know, Penn State blew them out. The second game, Penn State blew them out again, but they had told me afterwards, like, yeah, we're probably going to go with a run rule the rest of the weekend, just because both teams are a little bit thin in the bullpen. And they didn't want to be using a bunch of arms and get people's confidence down or anything like that for some freshmen. So on Saturday, Penn State actually run ruled Stanford again. So, or they run ruled them in that one because there was an established one. So the coaches can come to an agreement before a series or before a game and type stuff. But there are a couple conferences due. Now, the SEC went to it last year, maybe 2 years ago. And that was kind of the big, like, whoa, the SEC's doing this. That's crazy. And so LSU had a couple last year, but it's just basically like the SEC figures, not a ton of teams are coming back when you're down 13-1 in the seventh inning. So let's save, you know, that's all, often when you can get some emotional things that happen, hit by pitches, and suddenly people are mad at each other and that, all that type of stuff. So they are occasionally in those tournaments type situations as well, because there's another game being played afterwards. Let's wrap this one up, get it done. But back to their lineup, long diatribe there, but back to their lineup, Peyton Chatagnier is from a transfer from Ole Miss. He's already got three homers for them. He's a big piece of it. Carson Bowen and Curtis Byrne both had some big games against UCLA in the middle of it. Another transfer we didn't even mention on the pitching side is Ben Hampton from West Virginia. Has started for 4 years, and he goes to TCU. He's not even in the weekend rotation right now, so we'll see if he stays where he's at right now, or if he works his way in. So they went into the transfer portal and crushed it. They went and got big-time pickups to add to a team that wasn't losing a ton. We're losing a couple key pieces, but wasn't losing a ton for my College World Series team. So that's a team that is, when you watch them this weekend, you'll see a legit team that is a Omaha contender and a College World Series champion contender.
Yeah, it is a better team than USC. They're almost better at nearly every offensive spot. You know, with Austin O'Vern struggling too, that doesn't help USC. The question is going to be, TCU is a team that hasn't done, I don't think, the little things too well. You know, the pitching hasn't been great. Starting arms have all got ERAs over six. They hit the crap out of the ball. I mean, they've already hit 13 home runs, 82 hits as a team, including 14 doubles. The question is going to be, if USC can play sound baseball, as Andy Stankiewicz said, they'll be in it. But you miss up to this team, they're going to hit it out, even at Globe Life Stadium. Anyone in the lineup can ding you, whether it's Chatagnier, whether it's Tolley, whether it's one of the two catchers. Anthony Silva is an All-American at shortstop. Just everyone up and down the lineup is really crushing the cover off the ball right now. So USC's got to be careful. And then one game on Saturday, USC will face one of those SEC teams, and it's Texas A&M, another undefeated team. A little bit of a different story, you know, 7-0, but they've played McNeese, they've played UIW, and then a three-game series against Wagner. So they're undefeated, but haven't really been tested yet. But there is equal top-end talent on this Texas A&M team. You've got the Stanford transfer, Braden Montgomery, who's really good, and he's having another great season. He's got three home runs, 11 hits so far in seven games. And then Jace Lavalette had seven hits in the first week of the season. Five of them were homers to lead the country. You've got more talent up and down the lineup, but those two are the ones that are really highlighting the offensive attack so far. We'll see who USC gets on Saturday from Texas A&M, but this is another top 10 team. USC doesn't really get a break from TCU having to play Texas A&M, who, you know, some teams have, or some sites have Texas A&M ranked over TCU. It's going to be a really tough weekend for USC. You got TCU twice, and then this really good Texas A&M team on Saturday.
Yeah, and again, another team that really attacked both of these teams attacked the transfer portal really well. Lavalette's one of the best players in the country, could be a national player of the year contender. He's hitting .385 right now. He's got five homers, 15 RBIs already. Now, again, like you said, they haven't played a ton of competition. Ali Camarillo, shortstop, came over from CSUN, so someone USC has seen before. But these are the type of transfers they picked up. Jackson Appel, I really like him. Catcher from Penn, I've seen him a couple times. He's catching for them. So they go into the transfer portal, and I've been able to pick up these big-time pickups. But also, when you have someone like Lavalette from the high school ranks, you have Gavin Grahovic, who's from the SoCal area, is a freshman there who's hitting .409 right now. Like, I think he was my freshman of the year pick for D1 baseball. So they've got talent upon talent, but everyone can be beat. It's just about how you play. And like you said, they haven't played anyone yet, so it'll be the first time they're getting some real competition, playing against Arizona State, playing against USC. TCU is actually in their Pac-12 stretch. You know, they had three games against UCLA. They swept them this past week. This midweek, they'll play Washington State and Arizona, and then they'll play USC and Arizona State this past week or this upcoming weekend. So, but definitely a huge weekend. True road games for USC. Globe Life is right down the street. 20 minutes away, 25, 30 minutes away from Fort Worth. TCU has been having phenomenal crowds. So for this season, the atmosphere was electric against UCLA when they were hosting this past weekend. Texas A&M will come up. It's a little bit further away, but they will definitely bring their fans to come up to Globe Life. They love playing in Dallas as well.
Yeah, and TCU actually has experience there. The Big 12 championship and tournament was at Globe Life last year. TCU won it. So, you know, extra familiarity for TCU for a team that's already, you know, 20, 30 minutes away.
Yeah, and both of these teams have played in one of these Globe Life tournaments before. The Globe Life tournament started out as basically one weekend, and now it's expanded to about four. You can watch these games. I think these games are going to be telecast on D1 Baseball as well. So plug there. Make sure if you want to watch it, you know, check us out, get your subscription, all that type of stuff. What's that? What are you nodding your head for over there, Jack?
Or you can listen to the radio. I will be there calling all three of USC's games on the radio. So,
well, you got to get the video feed too. So, you know, mute the video feed, listen to Jack, you know, hopefully it syncs up correctly. And, you know, you have a great time watching the Trojans play against some really good competition.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. Really tough week for USC. I would say Michigan is easily the easiest game they'll play, but it's also, you know, this is a Michigan's a team that wants to get off the schneid themselves, and it's a team USC will face in the Big Ten. So there is adversity, but it's more USC needs to get comfortable. They've got the game at LMU, which is their first time playing there as a home game, and then a trip to Texas, where this is kind of really what you see, where you see what the fabric of this team is like. And I'm excited to see whether they can continue the momentum that they picked up over the weekend with what is a really nice series win against Portland. I saw some, you know, people were asking me on Twitter, how does USC lose to a program like GCU, or how is USC getting shut out by Portland? It's like, baseball is different than other sports. Just because the school is small doesn't mean they're not good at athletics. And I said it to the person on Twitter. If, you know, they lost to GCU, it's not the worst thing in the world, because GCU is so good of a program that they hired the man who built it to what it is right now to run their program. So, you know, don't just read the name of the school and say, oh, that school's small, USC should win, because the series over Portland is going to be a well-regarded one at the end of the season, I think.
Yeah, I think they'll do well in the WCC. Santa Clara is going to be a beast in that conference. I saw them again this weekend. They won with a walk-off grand slam. I'll be writing about that kid for D1 Baseball this week, John Baring. Great talk with him. One quick thing on Michigan. Keep an eye on Jonathan Kim, their center fielder. He's their three-hole hitter. He's a dude for him. He'll be a top five-round draft pick more than likely. And then they also have a two-way guy. And USC won't see him pitch, but Mitch Voigt is a weekend rotation arm for them and also plays first base for them. So another two-way guy. I love two-way guys. That's college coaches love two-way guys because that's basically a free scholarship. You know, you get two players for the price of one, which is so rare when you have only 11.7 scholarships. But that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. It's a jumbled week. Jack is going to Texas. I will actually be home. I just got home and I immediately took a nap and then woke up and was like, all right, let's do a podcast. So we're jamming everything in. So we're going to wrap this one up pretty tight. I'm your host, Shotgun Sproutland, saying thank you to everyone. I forgot, Jack. I got to get it in real quick. We did have an email. Didn't want to leave this out. Trojan Kevin said, since both of you pitched, who is the best batter you ever faced in your life? Could be a teammate, travel ball, high school, college, or little league opponent. And how did you do?
I can start on that one. I think the best hitter I ever faced was Nick York, who played at my high school. He ended up going in the first round to the Boston Red Sox in his, you know, rookie year in minor league ball, won Red Sox minor league hitter of the year. He's bounced around. I think he's in Double A right now, but one of the top Red Sox prospects. I faced him one time in tryouts. I believe I got him out, and then I gave up a home run to the next dude. So, who I think is playing college baseball as well, Arthur Soto, if he's watching, he had a home run. I want to say he was at Monterey, which I think they were moving up division. So I'm not exactly sure where they ended up, but I would say Nick York.
And you faced all the York brothers, with Zach York being at Grand Canyon. And
I'm not sure if I faced all of them, but I was on the field with them.
No, and then Joe York, who's at
Cal Poly. And then Zach, who USC faced with GCU.
Talented team there, or talented family there. Mine is similar, family, brothers, the Owings brothers. So Micah Owings, if you remember him, former major leaguer. I did not face him pitching against him. I faced him as a hitter, and I got out. I think I grounded out to short or something, which was an accomplishment that I put the ball in play, because, you know, he was throwing 90-95, and that was very rare at that time, especially in high school. in our area. But his little brother, John Mark Owings, was also a big time prospect and was in the Braves organization, top 10 round pick. And actually, unfortunately, lacerated his spleen or liver with a wall collision. Really wasn't the same after that, but he was the better hitter in my mind. And I faced him and I got him out once and walked him once. And then the third time I faced him, I think it was, I can't remember if it was me or another pitcher, but you know, it was me. Cause I threw one that was way outside. There's no way. And he still yanks it for a double into the gap. And I was like, and later in the game, I was on playing first base and I talked to him and I'm like, how the hell did you hit that? Like, that's not even, might not have been the inside the left-handed batter's box. And he still just yanked the shit out of it. So yeah, that was my experience with the Owings brothers. They were really very, really, very good players, very good athletes. They were both multi-sport athletes at Gainesville High School and now are doing things where they have a running a hitting facility or something, I believe, in the area as well. So shout out to them. They've been really good. Mike Owings, if you remember, was one of the best hitting pitchers in the major leagues for a long time. Remember, he pitch hit several times when pitchers still used to hit. Bring it back, baby. Bring it back.
I don't remember that, but I'm sure people do.
Oh, he was. They literally would send him up to pinch hit. You know, so that's how good he was as a pinch hitter. He dropped bombs. I grew up
with Madison Bumgarner doing that. So
yeah, he got lucky every once in a while. Anyways, that's gonna do it. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to everyone who submitted a email. Thanks, Trojan Kevin. Everyone who's listening, thanks so much to Annie Stankiewicz for taking the time to join us. And thanks to my co-host, Jack Smith, who will be on the call out at Globe Life. So make sure that you're tuning in the radio there while you're subscribed to D1 to watch the screen. Also, please like, share, subscribe, and leave us a review on your podcast listening platform. Hope you guys can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.